With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Beautiful Wednesday morning to you. Hope your day is off to a good start, or maybe it's just now getting started, or maybe you've come off that evening shift, the overnight, the graveyard, whatever you want to call it, and maybe you went and grabbed yourself some breakfast or something. You're just now down to powering down. All understandable. Whatever your situation may be, hope it's going well. Welcome to Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. My name is Craig Way. Glad to have you with us. Jeff Howe will be along in a little bit. He had let us know relatively early. He's been caught up in some really nasty traffic that's coming off big wreck or something, or big traffic snarl down in Hays County. So he'll be along hopefully here pretty soon, and said he'll be here in a little bit. So we'll have him here. Our producer, who is always here, is here again. That's Cameron Parker. How's your morning going?
Not too bad, Craig. How about yours?
Good. Yeah, good. This gets to the time of year for me where it's this great dichotomy, and I'm very, very fortunate and blessed and happy and just, you know, lucky and all kinds of combinations of all those good things, good fortune things, to be in a position where I have to diligently prepare for another trip this week, and excited about that, coming off the trip to South Florida and the Longhorns sweeping through the Coral Gables Regional and winning that regional, winning all three of their games. And now they get ready to leave tomorrow, and I'll be leaving with them tomorrow to go to Palo Alto, California, where they will have their NCAA mandated press conference and on-field practice at Klein Field at Sunken Diamond. They're on the farm, as they like to say, in Palo Alto there at Stanford, there in Northern California. And that'll be on Friday. And then game one of the NCAA Super Regional, of course, is Saturday afternoon, 5 o'clock, Texas against Stanford, which you'll be able to hear right here on the Horn. And we'll be on the air at 4:45 in the first pitch at 5 o'clock Texas time. So that will be the case. So I'm preparing for all of that, and then, of course, we'll see what the start time is for Sunday. That hadn't been announced yet. And then, of course, if it gets to an, if necessary, third and final rubber match, decisive third game of that Super Regional Series on Monday, they'll announce the start time at whatever time they get around to announcing that. So, you know, preparing for that trip. At the same time, certainly with an eye toward the possibility, if the team performs well enough, to go to Omaha for the College World Series, which would be a third consecutive trip. And of course, they're in their third consecutive Super Regional, and they're in their Super Regional for the fourth time in the last five full seasons of baseball played. Because remember, 2020, obviously, the shutdown came. They were 14-3 at the time and looking really, really good at the time that the shutdown happened. So there's but they're in the supers now for the fourth time in these past five full baseball seasons, and in the other occasions in 18 and 21 and 22, they went on to advance to the College World Series. So if that happens, and I know what entails that in terms of the planning and the packing and the equipment stuff and all of those kinds of things. All right, so that's one side of it. Here's the dichotomy part of it. As folks know who have listened to me over the years, both at the other place and then here for the past now 6 years. Time flies. Been here for 6 years. But also when I get to the tail end of June, late June into the first couple of weeks of July is when I'm out. The annual, as many have taken to calling it, sabbatical, the 2.5 weeks. It's between 2.5 to 3 weeks, depending on the year and the destination. And I always, you know, go back and I see friends and relatives there in North Carolina, but then spend most of my time really on the coast of North Carolina. Now I'll, you know, work some other things into it, some baseball or some historical sites or things like that. But it's mainly spent on the North Carolina coast. That's where, you know, where I got married last summer. So I actually got married in Myrtle Beach in South Carolina, but spend time all along that area in the Grand Strand area. So that's in the back of my mind. So Linda and I have been trying to put some plans forward for that. But again, the dichotomy, the nice sliding scale is the possibility of having to shove some things back further if the team continues on the roll. Now, I'm used to that, and I've had to zip back and forth, you know, after when it was all said and done, get back here to Austin, then take off for the coast. So I'm fully prepared and would certainly welcome it, all that. But that's kind of where my mind and the plans and stuff going on, even as I get ready and plan for this Super Regional. So that's why you asked how things have been going for me. That's what it's been like the last week or so.
Is it a bit of a relief knowing that you only have possibly maximum maybe three more work trips because Palo Alto, Omaha, and then maybe Dallas for the Big 12 media days?
Yeah, and that's a completely backside thing. That's once you crest the hill of vacation, after Palo Alto and after vacation. Then when I come back from vacation, I've always said this for people who said, you know, when do you sleep? When do you go on vacation? Blah, 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 blah. Do you ever have time? Yes. I have that one window, that one slot that happens right around, like I said, late June into right around the 10th of July, usually right around that time. I think I said to somebody the other day that I think that in the past 25 years of living down in this area, I think I have spent 3 4th of Julys here in the state of Texas. All the other ones have been back east because it's the one time when I can really take the vacation.
Yeah.
So anyway, when I come back, that's when I really look at it almost, you know, businesses today, they do the whole fiscal year thing where when the fiscal year ends and then it begins again. For me, the brand new calendar really begins when I get back from vacation with Big 12 media days. Now, I missed Big 12 football media days for only the second time since the existence of the Big 12 conference, and I missed it last year. I had a note from the teacher. I got married. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I was a little busy, so I got married. So I was there for that. However, I'll be there because obviously it'll be the final time that Texas and Oklahoma will be in the Big 12 media days there. So I will be in Arlington for that. But that starts the new clock for me, you might say. The new academic and athletic calendar year really begins for me with Big 12 media days, because right after that, I go straight to Houston for the coaching convention.
Mm-hmm.
Texas High School Coaches Association's annual coaching school. And I moderate a panel discussion, the Division I College Football Coaches panel discussion, where they get every single Division I FBS football coach in the state of Texas up on the stage on one thing. And, you know, and it's a panel discussion. We hit topics and take questions from coaches and things like that. There's that. I also emcee their Hall of Honor banquet where they induct the new coaches and some real recognizable names going into their Hall of Honor this year. And, you know, so, and then there's a thing called the Coaching Academy that I also emcee and moderate, where they have a list of distinguished speakers that talk. And it's really kind of a seminar just for assistant coaches who really want to be head coaches. And what does it take to do it? How do you interview properly, administrative things, all of the tools to help prepare for these guys to prepare for taking that next step in their coaching lives. So it's a fascinating deal. And then added to that this year, to open the convention, they have gotten as their guest speaker, Mack Brown.
Oh.
So Mack's coming in, and Mack asked them, instead of me giving some long-winded, stuffy speech, was his words, can we just get Craig up there with me? And he and I could just chat and take questions and stuff. So we'll have some fun with that. So all of that, all of that's part of like when that next calendar year for me really kind of begins, because it really goes from July to June back around for me. So that's when I get back into the football mindset. That's when I say you start seeing the milepost, the mile markers that are coming up. One of those, by the way, I know this will be of interest to fans. I've done it every year for like the last 25 years or so. I'll have to go back and get the actual year on this, but I think it's 25 years now, is when we get the shipment of Dave Campbell's Texas Football magazines. And we will be giving away free copies on the air and on our website at hornfm.com. That's around the corner. It's not far away, so we're gonna do that. So that's another one of those mileposts. When the magazine comes out, Big 12 Media Days, when that happens, coaching convention, those mileposts, those mile markers for the advent of the coming football season, both for college and high school, and then ultimately the NFL as well.
And I saw the covers that was released for coming up. Coach Samples, awesome to see him on the cover.
Yep. He's on the fold. The inside cover is Reginald Samples, the coach at Duncanville, finally got his state championship. Sonny Dykes is on the main cover there. Sun, S-O-N, Sun Rising, I believe, is the title on that. So, and, of course, Mike Craven from DCTF was in here with Aaron co-hosting this morning. Always great to see Mike as well. And so that's, you know, we're just around the corner from all of it, cranking up again, and I know everybody will be excited about it. But that doesn't mean there aren't substantive things to discuss, and there certainly are substantive things to discuss. I know your head, like so many others, was exploding yesterday with the announcement of the PGA Tour and the LIV Golf Ultimate merger coming in. Now that you've had a time being the big golf follower, devotee, aficionado that you are, pro golf tour of that, as well as just playing golf and loving golf, now that you've had a chance to absorb the impact, the shockwave, like so many others had yesterday. And then we've heard from Rory McIlroy this morning, and it was kind of a, I don't want to say it was a muted response, but it was certainly, it was less vitriolic, certainly, than anybody thought it might be in terms of that. So now that you've had a chance, here's one of those words over the past couple of decades we've gotten accustomed to saying. Now that you've had a chance to process it, what are your follow-up thoughts now?
This was always going to happen. I think the future of golf was going to be this, quote, merger. And when you really look at the details from it, Craig, it's not really LIV merging with the PGA Tour. It's more so at Saudi wanted to get a seat at the table in the American sports arena. And for a long time, you know, we've heard this word sports washing, right? We see it in Formula One where, you know, they have races there, they have events there, and they've been slowly trying to get their, you know, weasel their way into it. But of course, with all the 9/11 stuff, there's been a lot of backlash for it. And they've had tournaments in Saudi Arabia before, but they've always kind of been there. And basically, the whole point of LIV Golf wasn't really to, you know, grow the game, as Phil Mickelson and Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood said. It was because they just wanted the seat at the table. And now they use LIV as kind of a stepping stool to become part of that. And really now, Saudi Arabia and the public investment fund that's worth, you know, reportedly trillions of dollars, is now going to be a huge sponsor of the PGA Tour. They're probably going to have PGA Tour sanctioned events in Saudi Arabia. So the frustrating thing for me is we've heard Jay Monahan, who, You know, he had his big speech last year saying, you know, for those who joined LIV, well, at least the PGA Tour, you don't have to apologize for where you work, because those who are on LIV had to apologize, so to speak, for playing in Saudi Arabia. Well, now he just partnered with them, right? So basically all of the stuff he said, and he's just kind of walked back because, well, money talks. So I think eventually this was going to happen. I just didn't foresee it happening like that.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. Is your feeling now that the biggest, I don't know if it's the biggest problem, but in the initial response, one of the larger issues for the, not only for the golfers, but for those who follow golf and around golf, was everybody referring back to all the announcements and pronouncements that Jay Monahan did. Mm-hmm. That, for example, I watch all the local sportscasts every night. I watch one live and DVR the other ones. So I watch, you know, I watch KXAN, I watch KI, I watch KVU, and I watch Fox 7. So I watch all of those. And all the guys who are anchoring sports, I think, do a fine job of and did a fine job of explaining all of this and the way it was going to go down. Jeff Jones at KVU kind of went as far as to kind of deliver a commentary on it, and he was obviously you know, displeased with it, and talked about it, you know, being blood money and things like that. We've heard from other places as well. But the reason why I bring up his particular sportscast as an example is because he aired all those video clips that were dated with Jay Monahan. Look at talking, you know, in June of 2022, yeah. Fall of 2022, January of 2023, and then like even as recent as like a month or so ago, something like that. So my impression of this is that so many people are upset about, you said this for the past year plus, and we've got it on tape, and here it all is, and now you're doing this. That's that whole betrayal thing, I think, that a lot of folks are feeling about this. Obviously, it most directly affects the golfers themselves. But for the consuming public, there's a bit of, you know, folks who were really upset about it. And you, and probably E. Hogan, you and Aaron are probably the most outspoken on these airwaves about how you felt about the whole LIV Golf thing over the past year. I know that. But I do find it interesting that Jack Nicklaus basically said, you know, this has been going on for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
For most people, maybe it's only 1 year. But this has been This has been rolling for 3 years on that kind of thing. But like I said, you and Aaron have probably been as outspoken in your opposition to it, I think, as anybody else about that. So that's why I was trying to kind of get your pulse on this based on all of that video that we see of the commissioner of the PGA Tour denouncing LIV Golf, and now, hey, we got a new deal. You know, that kind of thing.
No, 100%. And a big reason why I'm so anti-Jay Monahan is because as the commissioner of the PGA Tour, you know, you see Adam Silver, you see Goodell, you see Buck Selig. These guys maybe aren't the most liked, but you see them make public appearances and you see them talk. Jay Monahan's given what? I believe like two press conferences in the past year, and he used Roy McIlroy, he uses Justin Thomas, he uses John Rahm to go out as a mouthpiece to kind of, you know, make the stand up of, don't go to LIV, you know, defend your legacy here in the tour, don't take the blood money, don't fall for sports washing. And then for the last couple months, he's been doing the same exact thing. And you mentioned, you know, this didn't just happen overnight. This has been happening for handful of years, and we're in this position because Jay Monahan refused to meet with other ventures who wanted to create a new golf league. Before LIV Golf, there was the Premier Golf League, which is the same idea, and a lot of things that LIV uses was taken from it. But they came to Jay Monahan and said, hey, let's partner. Let's create a separate league that is with the PGA Tour that allows us to have team events, et cetera, et cetera. And Jay Monahan shut the door in their face. Said, we don't need you. We're fine. We're good. The water's fine over here. Just stay over there. And then what happened? It didn't work because Saudi Arabia now, they realized they found an opening and they had the money that the PGL investors did not have. They did not have the PIF. to deal with. They didn't have, not have billions and
that's
trillions of dollars.
That's a huge part of all of this.
Yeah, and because of that, and that's what got them at the table, was because basically Jay Monahan could not decline the money that Saudi Arabia offers. And so, for those who's been against sports washing, well, I mean, now if you're been a PGA Tour defender, I mean, basically you're just going to have to suck it up. You're going to have to deal with it, because unless you don't watch golf, because now sports washing has completely taken over the game of golf across the entire world.
Yeah, Stoner on the Specs text line, and we always offer the Specs text line open to you, 337-3776, 512-337-3776. Stoner says that this started really in earnest 5 years ago with the PGL.
Yeah.
Give some background on that.
Yeah, the Premier Golf League. So basically what I just said was it wasn't a separate league. It was offered to Jay Monahan and the PGA Tour as a team-sanctioned events that would be a part of the PGA Tour schedule, and Jay Monahan would not meet with them. He was not interested. He thought that the way the PGA Tour was structured was fine and everything was going great, when, you know, obviously it wasn't. And eventually he kept saying no, and Greg Norman and the Saudis got involved, and they said, well, let's just take the same concept that the PGL has, the Premier Golf League, and create our own league. And instead of working with the PGA Tour, since they don't want to work with us, let's just go ahead and start taking the Phil Mickelsons, the Brooks Koepkas, the Bryson DeChambeaus, and create our own league and basically disrupt golf. And it did. I don't think a lot of people saying, well, you know, LIV won and everything. I don't know if LIV won, because the product wasn't great. The TV ratings were abysmal. I mean, you had to watch it either on the YouTube for $3. You had to download the CW app.
Did you do all that?
I did not. But what did work was that it did disrupt golf, whereas the Saudi Arabias and the PIF, the Public Investment Fund, got a seat at the table, and now they're going to be working hand-in-hand. I mean, they're going to have a board spot. The governor, I can't say his name, Al Yousum or whatever
right.
It is, or Yousum Al something, he's going to have a board seat on the PGA Tour with mm-hmm. Jay Monahan.
Yeah, that's true. There's a couple of texts here. And this is going to get into my other point on this, and then we'll be taking a break. We do have our usual offering, so we're not going to be just talking about this for 2 hours. So trust me on that. We've got Longhorn Notebook coming up. We'll have that. We do have Inconceivable. We do have another Longhorn Notebook and a Flex 30 update coming up next hour as well. And there's a lot of other things to get to as well. But just to kind of speak to a couple other points about this. T-Bone, for example, on the Specs text line says, I see nothing wrong with showing the receipts. The love of money is the root of all evil. It's sad, but I mean, who among us is surprised? There's that. Somebody else said, the collapse has started. The PGA let a foreign government take them over, who are terrorists and murderers, all for the almighty dollar. Hope Americans boycott the tour and all who support this merger. And then Stoner says the PIF has over $600 billion in it, dragging out litigation to expose the PGA Tour's ridiculous nonprofit protection at any cost was always
mm-hmm,
the
yeah.
plan. So now we're seeing all the other sidebar elements to this. Obviously, it's going to be at the top of the list for many, many people, and that's the human rights questions, the questionable involvement mm-hmm. in certain things, as well as a lot of the things with the Saudi government. Okay, there's that, and that's a pretty big biscuit right there. Okay, so there's that. Then there's the money, and then there is the quote-unquote restraint of trade that many felt the PGA was doing to it. There are certain elements, a few common elements when I've read about all of this, especially over the last 24 hours. And if you separate, and this is an extremely difficult thing, it's going to be an extremely difficult thing for folks to separate this part from it. And I totally get it. I'm just using a numerical example here. If you were to separate the quote-unquote foreign government involvement on this, and you looked at it straight from the money side of it, and you say, how can you do one without the other? I mean, because after all, it's the foreign government that's, you know, where all the other money is. But if you're talking about, there's so many nuanced historical comparisons to what happened. And people know that I really am a student of the history of collegiate and pro sports and high school sports as well. I'm a firm believer in that. I think it was the Benjamin Franklin line about you have to know where you've been before you can know where you're going, you know, that kind of thing with regard checking our past. And the old, then there's the old, those who do not learn from the mistakes of the past are condemned to repeat it. There's that. But in studying the history of how rival professional sports leagues sprang up, the two that come most to mind to me were the AFL in 1960 and the ABA.
Yep.
Now, the ABA was Gary Davidson's project. He's the same guy who started up the World Football League in the mid-70s. That came out of him just, you know, wanting initially a franchise. And a lot of times it comes from that, just wanting a seat at the table, as you pointed out. And then the ABA, of course, was around for 9 years. And now it went away with the four teams, Indiana, New York, San Antonio, the New York Nets, San Antonio, and, of course, one of the NBA finalists this year, the Denver Nuggets, in the moving into the NBA. And this is Denver's first ever appearance in the NBA Finals. They did go to the final ABA Finals back in 1976. So this is only their second time they've been in a pro basketball, pro league, American professional sports league basketball championship series. But the AFL, there are some interesting and curious threads and connections between what's happening now and what happened back then. The AFL began because Lamar Hunt wanted an NFL franchise. He wanted an NFL franchise. And the NFL stonewalled him and would not get, he tried to buy the Chicago Cardinals. First, he wanted an expansion franchise. And George Halas, the power broker that he was, not only as the coach and, you know, an owner and everything with the Chicago Bears, but also a big piece of the NFL's ironclad running the way they did. And this was right before Pete Rozelle came in to being as the commissioner, just stopped him at every turn.
Yeah.
So then he tried to buy the Chicago Cardinals. He thought he had a deal with Violet Bidwell, who was the wife of the widow of Charles Bidwell, the original owner of the Cardinals. That got shut down. So at that point, 26-year-old Lamar Hunt is flying home from Chicago after being rebuffed again and then said, why couldn't I just do this on our own? And then he figured it out, and the AFL sprang from that. The point of this is to say that because of certain individuals or entities being stonewalled by the PGA in terms of wanting a larger cut of the pie or an initial seat at the table, however, whatever phrase you care to choose, that's how things like this start up sometimes.
Yeah.
So, you know, it happened with the AFL, it happened with the ABA, and with a PGA Tour and LIV Golf. It's a different world now.
And you mentioned all those lawsuits going on. There's an antitrust lawsuit, anti-competitive lawsuit going on between LIV and the PGA Tour. All that goes away because of this new agreement. Now, I'm curious, you know, a lot of people have been thinking, well, isn't it anti-competitive if PGA Tour just buys up all the professional golf across the world? Well, you just mentioned two cases in the sports realm where that didn't happen, with the NFL purchasing the AFL and the NBA purchasing the ABA.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way,
and here's some more, like I said, we were going to get into some more text on this. Somebody said, it isn't just golf. Saudi Arabia is making big moves. They're getting all the big footballers like Cristiano Ronaldo and Benzema, and they're offering Messi as well. Somebody else, I will boycott all PGA Tour events. Somebody else said, speaking rhetorically, since it don't lecture me as a golf fan, if you watch the NBA, why is Enes Kanter Freedom blackballed? Feasance to China, pure and simple. Exactly. I get where a lot of folks are saying. And our good friend and colleague, Rodney Rodriguez, host of Revved Up, here on the Horn, texted in and said, this is like, and he's right, I remember this now. I was working in Dallas at the time at KRLD. This is like when CART and IRL had the big split, the Indy Racing League. It devastated IndyCar racing, which at the time was the biggest form of motorsports in the country.
Yep.
It was, because F1 did not have the footprint, certainly not on the level that it has now, but it just didn't have the footprint in the U.S. They tried it in Dallas around the Cotton Bowl in 84, and it was a disaster, and it had been with various small degrees of success in Long Beach and Detroit, a couple other places, but Indy racing ruled the open wheel racing. It really did. But CART and IndyCar, and one of our big contributors when I worked at KRLD back in the day was Johnny Rutherford, 3-time Indy 500 champion. And he was, JR was living in Fort Worth and was on with us a lot and talked about the whole CART and IndyCar split. It was devastating in a lot. So there's all of that.
And it was going that in that same direction, Craig, but this joint agreement kind of saves that. Right. Whereas who knows where golf was heading if Liv and the PGA
right.
Tour can continue the butt heads. But now that goes away.
Maybe it was headed where this next texter said. Maybe Tiger will start his own tour. I know who would be happy with that. My co-host, the pride of Northwest Williamson County, proud graduate of Florence High School, and an avowed, huge Tiger Woods fan. But you know him best for his outstanding work at Horns 24/7. That would be Jeff Howe. All right, so if Tiger started his own tour, if he had the Tiger Tour, would you be on board with
hell
that?
Hell yeah, I'd be there
yeah.
day one.
I knew you would. You'd be all about Tiger
yeah.
on that.
Right now I'm about getting the notebook ready for the next segment
okay.
after my
all right.
travels.
I'm going to let you do that. You had some travails getting in, didn't you?
It was nasty. It was one of those deals where I'm just kind of listening to the radio and uh-huh. you know kind of zoning out. And yes, I do text and work on the phone, so we're all guilty of it. Don't try to knock me too much. But I'm like, man, I've been sitting here. I've been like crawling for a while and looked at the time. I'm like, dude, what is the deal? And nothing was showing. Doesn't that just piss you off when you look at your traffic
yeah.
app and nothing's there?
I'm yeah, like, and our good friend and colleague Don Miller is handling all the traffic. I heard nothing from him about the reports. Now, he about stuff down south. Now, he mentioned the mess coming out of I-35 out of Georgetown, so I went toll road all the way around
so,
this morning.
You remember where you had your fender bender when you had it in San Marcos from Alamo Bowl time?
Yeah, right there
this
by Aqua Arena
probably,
Springs.
Yeah, this was probably, well, I actually thought yours was further back. Yeah, it was right after the Aqua Arena exit, which in that town is probably the worst place
yeah.
you can bottleneck things.
Yep, right in that area.
Other than right around 123, it's right up there. So I was yeah. like, why are we not moving? And then it's down to one lane, and there's fire trucks and ambulances, so...
Yeah,
it was a little rough.
By the way, this has nothing to do with the Middle East or Saudi thing. But CB says to you, "R.I.P. to the Iron Sheik."
No, the Iron Sheik died.
Apparently, according to CB,
no,
the
that's
Iron
a
Sheik
rib, dude.
Bad.
No,
that's what he says. R.I.P. to the Iron Sheik.
You can't spring something like that on me, man.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Just
81 years old, Jeff.
Oh, dude, that is man. The Iron Sheik has. 99% of it I cannot repeat. One of the best Twitter accounts out there. Okay. The Iron Sheik's Twitter account is awesome. That is sad, man.
All right. We're going to take a break. If folks want to continue to text in, I know obviously this is a really hot button topic for a lot of folks, and it's fine, and we'll refer to those. So we'll do that. But we've got some other things to get to, and our Longhorn Notebook is next up on the list. We'll do that when we continue to light the tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and hornfm.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Craig Webb and Jeff Howe light the tower.
This is Light the Tower on the Horn. Craig Wright, Jeff Howe with you. And we're with you up until the noon hour.
He's now on the other side, putting people in the camel clutch.
Yeah.
Breaking backs, making people humble.
So the Iron Sheik has gone.
Rest in peace to the Iron Sheik.
Somebody said, in honor of the Iron Sheik, everyone please go put a family member in a camel clutch today. It's our friend John in the Bay. So he's listening at the Instagram campus this morning. There's some meetings there. Wow. Well done, John. Hope to see you there at the Super.
The Instagram weekend. Campus. You know, that must be a California thing. Apple calls their offices campus. The campus.
Yeah, Google. All that stuff out there. Google down there by Irvine there. I've seen their gigantic thing.
Have you seen Apple's new release?
Oh, I saw this yesterday.
Yeah. $3,500 VR glasses,
that.
Kind of.
Heard about that. And then I also heard Ty talking about it yesterday morning with Bucky and Aaron. He said, Aaron said, well, apparently there's only a 2-hour battery life. And Ty said, you don't want to be on it for 2 solid hours. He said, your mind might turn to mush.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. My youngest son is big into the VR.
Never have gotten into it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's really big into that deal. He likes that as well. So, Specs text line. I know a lot of folks are responding. Said, no, not the Iron Sheik. And T-Bone said what you said, Jeff. He's such a great Twitter follow.
It's awesome. I was giving you a little rundown of some of the things that Sheiky would tweet over the years.
Yeah. Somebody else, and when we were talking about this whole deal, just to clarify, actual slavery is legal in Saudi Arabia. So, I mean, this is the responses, obviously, that are coming in. And it said, forget about golf. EA College Football 2024 is in jeopardy. So,
is it really?
I don't know. I guess it could be. Off of that. So, a little specificity. Give us some more on that. In the meantime, we're going to give you our first hour Longhorn Notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook.
Let's talk about one of my favorite articles that comes out every year.
Yes.
By one of my colleagues at 24/7 Sports. It's Bud Elliott. He's been doing this for over a decade now. The blue chip ratio.
Yeah.
And Bud's theory is, basically, and he's not wrong, and I'll give you the rationale here in a minute. The blue chip ratio basically means to win a national championship, history shows you've got to recruit more 5- and 4-star players than you do 2- and 3-star players. Prospects. I mean, I need to correct myself. Prospects. I don't like when people say players. You're recruiting prospects, because it's not, if it were players, you would just be taking the best high school football players. But as we know, sometimes the best high school football players aren't the best prospects, and so on and so forth. So
basically, there's a difference between a player and a prospect.
Yes. And I think this just kind of shows you where the trends have gone in college football. So I want to start from the bottom. So Bud basically runs this down going back to 2011. Alabama, shocker, had a blue chip ratio of 71%. 71% of their roster in 2012 and 2011 were blue chip guys, 4- and 5-star guys. In 2013, Florida State was your national champion. Their blue chip ratio, 53%, which is going to be the second lowest that we'll talk about here in just a second. We'll mention the lowest here in a minute. 2014, Ohio State, 68%. 2015, Bama again, 77%. Your lowest was Clemson in 2016, 52%. It helps when among that 52% is a transcendent quarterback like Clemson had with Deshaun Watson. Alabama won it in 2017 with 80%. That 2017 Bama team, think about it. That was, you had Tua, Najee Harris, Devontae Smith, those guys were freshmen. Alex Leatherwood, those were freshmen playing significant, or playing and or starting in the national championship game.
Okay.
Bama was at 77%, or 80%, excuse me, in 17. Clemson in 18, 61%. LSU in 2019, 64%. Alabama in 2020, that offense, Sark had one of the best college football offenses we've seen in the last quarter century.
Yes.
83% of their roster was 5- and 4-star guys. Georgia was at 80% 2 years ago, and Georgia was at 70% last year, 77% last year when they won the national title. So, who are the 16 programs, Craig, you might ask, that have a chance to win the national championship? You can go all the way down. Auburn at 51%, they're over the threshold. Now, they've got some challenges. They were not very good last year under Brian Harsin. Mm-hmm. and Cadillac Williams for the few games he was interim. Mm-hmm. We'll see if Hugh Freeze can get that turned around. I'm sure that blue chip ratio is going to climb in Hugh Freeze. I have no doubt about that.
Right.
USC at 52%, Michigan at 54%, Penn State at 55%, Miami at 61%, Florida at 64%. You know, it's a common theme here. Like, these are traditional blue blood programs.
Yeah.
They're all over the threshold. Notre Dame at 65%, Oregon at 67%, and then at 70%, Texas and Oklahoma, both 70% of their roster are blue chip guys. Now you go up from there, LSU at 71%, Clemson at 72%. You want to take a guess who's got the fourth highest blue chip ratio in the country? The top three should be a dead giveaway.
Well, the top three I would say would be, in some order, Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State.
But Alabama won at 90%.
Yeah.
Like, Nick Saban, unless you're a kicker or a punter, Nick Saban doesn't
take. So who's number two?
Ohio State, 85%.
And three would be Georgia.
Georgia, 77%.
So number four is kind of, we're kind of doing this college football playoff thing where they go to the who's that four team.
And if you think about a state where you've got a really fertile recruiting ground, and a conference that has a lot of cachet, and you think of all the schools I've mentioned, there's one I haven't mentioned yet.
USC? No. See, you already said LSU. That's why I didn't.
How about Texas A&M at 73%?
Okay.
So talent, A&M fans, should technically not be your problem. I thought Rod was mentioning some of this yesterday. I think the issue with A&M right now is they've got talent.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think you look at the numbers of guys they put in the NFL, I don't even think it's a talent development problem. They got a culture problem, a big culture problem that they got to figure out there. So Texas at 70%, the Longhorns are right in that mix to be in the – and it doesn't guarantee you, and Bud even mentions this in the article.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you this paragraph. I'll read it verbatim just so you can kind of put into context what all this means.
Okay.
And you can – by the way, this is on the front page at Horns 24/7 right now. You can go there and get it. You don't even need a subscription. It's a free article. That's not to say that development doesn't matter. It certainly does, but nobody wins a national title by player development in lieu of elite recruiting. Plenty of coaches who are regarded as elite have never sniffed winning at all because they cannot accumulate enough talent.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all know who those schools are. Like, Luke Fickell wasn't going to win a national championship at Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
You just go on down the list. On the other hand, there are examples of coaches who are not regarded as premier head men who have won it all thanks to elite recruits. And here's the caveat with the names I'm going to mention, and you'll understand. Not to lump them all into the same category. Again, but nobody ever accused Gene Chizik, Les Miles, Mac Brown, or Ed Orgeron of being tactical masterminds. Dare I say, Craig, one of these things is not like the other that group of four. So, you know, there's no substitute for player player development is key. Culture is a huge part of it, but it starts with recruiting elite prospects, and Sark has done that. What makes me hopeful that this is actually going to mean something under Steve Sarkisian, because when you look back at Texas and the blue chip ratio, it had gone down under Mack to where I think by the time Tom Herman took the job, I think his first team at Texas, I want to say the blue chip ratio was 46-47%.
Wow.
Yeah, more than half of your roster were not blue chip guys at Texas. And part of that was you had a lot of attrition from that year coaching turnover. Remember, Tom Herman ran out a lot of guys that went on to Power 5 programs and played significant snaps. And one guy, in particular Jordan Elliott, ended up getting drafted. So, you know, it does start with recruiting talent. But I'll never forget this, and it's interesting that a documentary is coming out, the Netflix documentary about the 2000s Florida teams under Urban Meyer.
Right.
After he left Florida and left that program in shambles from the heights of where it is, and that's why that's a fascinating team. And I want to see what this documentary is all about. Yes, you're going to have the Tebow stuff. You'll have the Aaron Hernandez stuff. But, like, how it peaked and how it just fell off a cliff really fast. Remember that year between when he was at Florida and when he took over at Ohio State, Urban Meyer was doing ESPN?
Yeah, he was.
I heard him say this, and for some reason it's always stuck with me. He said
one of those college game day sets.
Yeah. He said the thing he realized about Florida, where he went wrong, was he said by the end, he said, we got so consumed. He said, and I got so consumed with acquiring talent that I forgot how to build a team. I wasn't taking that into consideration.
Okay.
So that means you can take talented guys, and we've seen this problem at Texas, But the talented guys have to fit into your program.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to be culture fits. They got to be scheme fits. They got to be fits academically, socially. They got to be able to handle it. And we heard Max say this for years, Craig. And I know he's told recruits this because recruits, even some recruits that ended up playing for him that had success at Texas that were All-Americans, Mac even told some of those guys, he's like, I don't know if Texas is the right place for you. I'm looking at your grades. I'm talking to your high school coach. I don't know if you're talented enough to play here, but I don't know if this is the right place for you.
Right.
You need to think really hard about it before you commit to come here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes coaches don't take that into consideration. And the problem at Texas has been, we saw this with Mac at the end, and we definitely saw it with Charlie, and to an extent with Tom Herman. By the end, there's so much pressure on you to win that you put the blinders on, and at that point, you're just, I got to get talent.
Yeah.
And then that's a problem that the next guy has to clean up.
Yep.
And Charlie had to clean up Max's.
That's why
mess.
I always talk about the current coach paying for the sins of the past.
Yeah. Charlie had to clean up some of Max's mess. Tom had to clean up some of Charlie's mess. And we know Sark had to clean up some of Tom's mess. So it's this perpetual cycle. But I feel like Sark has not only recruited talented guys, but you look at their low attrition numbers, their low transfer numbers. Like, if, and Craig, you know this being around this team. Like, we've been around Texas teams that have won like the same number of games, mm-hmm. like 8-9 games. And those were teams that were not fun. Some of those teams were not fun to be around.
Right.
The team last year, though, it was a fun group to be around.
Right. Like,
you enjoyed going to do your job and being around these guys because they were fun guys to be with. And you could tell this is a group that genuinely likes coming to the facility every day. So from a culture standpoint, I think Sark's got it right. It just goes back to what I've been talking about is my overarching theme for the year. With all this talent, with the right culture, can Sark and this staff give this team the schematic advantage that they're going to need to get over the hump in those two or three tight games where the talent's going to even out and you need that little extra edge, can that put you over the top? But Texas, certainly, the talent is there. Even though you might look, oh, Texas has 70% blue chips and Alabama's got 90%, look at where the blue chips for Texas are now. They're on the offensive line. They're at quarterback. They're at wide receiver. You got some guys on the edge. You got guys in the secondary. You've got now premium positions where you've recruited and cultivated talent that now is in a position to go help you win big.
There you go. All right.
I know I got a little long-winded there. But
that's okay. I want to get into something next hour. We don't have to wait for the notebook to do it, but I want you to give some thought because the vibe I get from the past and even just in this current day and time from a lot of fans is a struggle with the word culture because there are varying definitions and meanings of what it means in terms of a college athletic program, football, basketball, or baseball. Now, it is the buzzword for coaches, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But since it's like that drop we have, Nick Saban, tell me what it means. What does it all mean? You know, it means different things. So yeah. I want to get into that a little bit next hour.
And yeah, somebody asked on the Specs text line, what makes for a great culture?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do want to get into that because that's not.
Yeah.
One thing I've learned, Craig, it's kind of the definition of culture is kind of like the definition of pornography.
You know it when you see it.
I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah. It's one of the most fascinating responses that I get when I do that panel discussion.
Yeah.
And I'll bring it up again. I'll tell you right now, I'm going to bring up the word culture again because of the varied responses and definitions in these 12 Division I FBS coaches' minds when they're on the day. It's about what it really means. Mm-hmm. And so it means little things and it means big things and a lot in between. So we'll get into more of that next hour. Up next is Inconceivable when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable.
You keep using the Horn. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Okay, here we go. With some Inconceivable for you here. I know that you're...
Do the chairs get broken in here every day? Like, I feel like I'm almost sitting on the floor right now.
Think about the size of us individuals. These chairs can only take so much.
But some days I feel like my head's about to touch the ceiling. And I don't even think this is the same chair I sat in yesterday. I think this is a different chair.
It's kind of like that SportsCenter commercial where you're sliding down LeBron, sliding down in the Scott Van Pelt. Took his
He's
chair.
Got the throne.
He took the throne. No, oh, good luck finding your chair,
LeBron.
Yeah, that deal. Okay, fast food update. Of course, Jeff has let it be known that he's not down with McDonald's.
Ooh.
not a fan of McDonald's. He's not.
The McRib season is about the only time.
That's true. You are in for that.
And in the occasional breakfast.
Okay. But you don't like their milkshakes, right?
The milkshake machine is always broken, and there's better places to get milkshakes anyway.
Well, they better make sure they're not broken now. You ever get the milkshakes?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. How about this one? For the first time ever, McDonald's has, I present to you, Cam, a purple milkshake.
Okay.
All right.
Purple.
It's a unicorn frappe type deal?
Well, here's the deal. You know how Jeff has jokingly said to us that he kind of took on the role of Grimace at your high school, right? You said you felt that when you were in the all purple, when you were in number. It's a Grimace shake is what it is. So.
Oh, their stupid mascot?
Yeah, the Grimace. Yeah, it's a purple Grimace shake that they say is inspired by Grimace's iconic color and sweetness.
Iconic.
Now, when you look at it, you can say, okay, it's a purple shake, so it's a vanilla shake with food coloring, right?
Yeah.
It's not.
Huh?
They say it is not. It's actually a blend of vanilla soft serve and mixed berry flavors.
Hmm.
And it's the first new flavor since they expanded their collection of Shamrock Shakes 6 years ago.
Okay.
This is the first new milkshake that McDonald's has. It's for the summertime. So they say it's a pretty unique shake. You can rarely spot a berry shake on a fast food menu that isn't strawberry, it says. So it's there certainly to see how it goes during the summer. You talked about the frappe. The Oreo frappe has made a grand return. And there's a buzz. Here you go, Jeff. There's a buzz of a cheesy jalapeno bacon quarter pounder.
Say that again?
The menu. Cheesy jalapeno bacon quarter pounder.
I just think McDonald's, just stay in your lane like you're McDonald's. People are eating.
You would love to say a lot of that same stuff, you know, when Sonic rolls out some different things. She goes, stay in your lane.
Ain't nobody going to McDonald's to try it. Cam, you ever go to McDonald's thinking, I'm going to try some variety today?
I'm going to have a salad today.
No, you know what you know exactly.
The same thing every single time.
It's just like.
What is it you order again?
McDouble. The last time I went, they had the 2 for $6 because I'm cheap. So if they have like a 2 for $6 or the 3 for $10, I'll usually get that. Usually it's McDouble, some nuggets, and that's about it.
Now Chick-fil-A might have a limited time item, and they'll rotate them. I get it.
Okay.
Let's go to Chick-fil-A. You know what you're getting.
Yeah. Well, they also have a
nuggets
very condensed
or a sandwich.
Menu.
Nuggets or a sandwich. But I don't know why people have to spend like 15 minutes in the drive-thru or talking through something.
To figure out what they
want. They're getting their order taken to Chick-fil-A. I'm like, it's nuggets or a sandwich. Or maybe you want a salad that day. You're feeling you need to watch out for your figure.
Okay.
Like, it shouldn't take you that long, should it?
Okay. I didn't think you'd be going for that. But anyway, the Purple Grimace Shake coming soon to a McDonald's near you. Did you guys see the deal with the Yankees game last night? The Yankees White Sox game?
Yeah.
Did you see it, Jeff?
No.
Horrific air pollution.
Was this in New York?
New York City. And it had nothing to do with New York City. Canadian wildfires.
Oh.
So, wildfire smoke just like shrouded the Northeast. And there was this one photo. I'm trying to see if I can find it here. It was showing the Yankees, Yankees White Sox game. And it was something else, showing a picture on the mound for the Yankees, and the sky just looked all kinds of apocalyptic. It looked really, really bad.
I don't mean to make light of wildfires and the severity that they do.
But you're about to.
Do.
Right?
You know what the Iron Sheik's last tweet was?
What's that?
In all caps. Blank the wildfires.
That's what he was referring to. That's what he was referring to. The wildfires. Absolutely. So here's how bad it was. You say, okay, how bad it could be is New York, right? I mean, they have stuff anyway. Smoke from the fires has periodically engulfed the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic for more than a week, raising concerns over the harms of persistent poor air quality. This is the smoke has come down from more than 100 wildfires burning in Quebec. So, New York City's air quality index at one point last night was above the 200 number. So what does that mean? It's a level that's very unhealthy. The city had the worst quality of any major metropolitan area, not in the United States, Jeff Howe, in the world.
Seriously?
In the world. It had the world's worst air quality. And then later, it had the second worst just after New Delhi, India.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, man, if you're beating New Delhi on anything that's got to do with air pollution.
Yeah. Well, other.
Times are hard.
Yeah. Other cities on the list were Doha, Qatar, Baghdad, and Lahore, Pakistan. New Yorkers right there with them.
Can I ask a dumb question at the risk of sounding dumb? Why is air quality in the Middle East so bad?
Because they don't have pollution control standards.
Just like the oil fields and refineries and whatnot.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure I was on the right track there.
As a result, at least 10 school districts in central New York State canceled outdoor activities and events yesterday. Those activities included academic, athletic, and extracurricular events, while outdoor recess and gym classes were also canceled. It was really, really bad.
Would you like to know our air quality score?
But they had the Yankees White Sox game last night.
Air quality score in our Fairburg right now is 48. So we're good.
Okay, that's good. It's good to know, that's for sure.
And this means that air quality index is 48, which is similar to yesterday. Air quality is satisfactory and poses little to no health risks.
So. Good. New York was 200. Above 200 last night. Worst in the world. Got one more story here.
You hang a banner for that?
Yeah, really. Put it in the garden, right? You have a cat, right?
Yes, I do.
How old's the cat?
He's probably 9.
Okay. How did you come about getting the cat? Was it an adopted deal?
It's a sad story.
Yeah.
My wife found him at work on her campus, consoling his dead sibling, just meowing uncontrollably.
So, see, and a lot of that happens because of unwanted litters of kittens, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there may be a solution for a lot of that. Now, we say you spayed and neuter your pets.
You could follow Bob Barker's advice.
Yeah. There are an estimated 600 million domestic cats in the world. And did you know that 80% of them are feral or stray? 600 million cats in the world. 80% of them are feral or stray animals. Now, spaying and neutering, as we know, number one thing, certainly it helps prevent homeless kittens and overcrowded animal shelters. However, there's a new study. Scientists have announced a potential new method of, wait for this, Jeff, feline contraception that does not involve being spayed. And it's showing early promise. Long-lasting contraceptive injections that prevent ovulation. Okay? So, as they say, Bill Swanson, the director of animal research at the Cincinnati Zoo, said the impetus of proof-of-concept study was to really address the cat and dog overpopulation issue and the euthanasia of a lot of these unwanted animals in shelters. The best way to avoid euthanasia is to not have all these animals that don't have homes. So they've started this, and like with most things, they started with lab rats testing it, giving mice these doses of this hormone function. And it's a much to our surprise, it essentially shut down most ovarian activity in rodents and made them completely infertile. So we thought, well, this is an interesting tool, but what can we use it for? So they tried it with cats, and it worked. So,
all right,
feline contraception. That's not just the name of a band there in Austin, you know. It's actual possibility. Now, this is disgusting. Somebody said cat tastes like chicken.
You did, yeah. It is.
So I said, put that banner next to the Director's Cup banner about the pollution there. Anyway.
It's hanging right next to the NIT championship banner.
Yeah. Somebody said, hey, go Frogs shake at Mickey D's. No, it's a grimace. But it is purple. Second hour of Life the Tower coming up on the Horn.